Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, you're listening to The Prepoint Pod. Today I have Nat and Zoe from The Athlete Project talking about relative energy deficiency in sport and fueling for aesthetic sports like gymnastics and dance and sport aerobics. And we talk a little bit about body image in this episode. So if you would like some support, feel free to visit the Butterfly Foundation resource I've posted in the show notes. Enjoy this episode. So good morning, Zoe and Natalie. Thank you so much for joining me on the Prepoint Pod. We're going to talk today about nutrition for dancers in very broad terms. But before we start, I'd love for you to introduce yourselves, maybe like one at a time, and just talk a little bit about your involvement in sport and what made you want to be a sports dietitian.
Okay, I'll start first. Hi, everyone. My name's Nat. And yeah, both Zoe and I, we've had an interesting path because we both actually went to high school together and we're in the same classes, from high school. And now we get to work together as sports dietitians at Eat Smart. So it's been a really, I suppose, full circle moment to go through school and uni and then almost, just continue on in the workforce now. But yeah, I suppose I initially started as a dancer. So my mum saw a display type of thing at a shopping center and signed me up for classes when I was 2 years old. And yeah, continued on in that. Both my sisters are dancers too, and they still to this day dance and teach dance. They're dance teachers. And I suppose from there, actually, as I moved into high school, I got involved in sports aerobics, or as some people know it, aerobic gymnastics. And so that kind of then took over dance a little bit, and I kind of had to make a choice. So I ended up moving more into the aerobics world and continuing in that, and moved through into the national squad. And I guess for me, like, nutrition was always a fairly important aspect of training. I loved food, loved to bake on the weekend. I remember having all of the MasterChef junior recipes printed out in a little folder and would like make them on the weekend. Definitely had more of a sweet tooth, but yeah, I think I just thought it would be such a cool job to get involved as, a dietitian. And I remember being at one of my first national squad camp, and we had a sports dietitian come in and do a talk with us. And I just thought, oh, wow, like, that's your job. You get to talk to, athletes of so many different kinds and do presentations and talk about food all day. And I just thought, wow, that would be, such a cool job. And I suppose for me, I had quite a positive experience with my coaches and, how they supported me in, eating well for performance. And I wanted to share that with other people because I know that's not the experience of everyone in the dance, and then, leading on to the gymnastics as well. So I guess that was also a bit of an inspiration for me to help others and support their journey in both health and performance goals.
So, Zoe, tell us about your journey into becoming a dietitian.
Of course, thank you. So my name's Zoe. I also started dance quite early on as well. And then I actually joined and started rhythmic gymnastics classes because my best friend was giving it a go. And it was actually in primary school that I first heard of a sports dietitian. And I remember thinking it was the coolest thing ever. I was like, oh, they get to talk about sports and food. Like, that sounds great. And it was actually Carrie Leach, who is our Eat Smart director, that I learned that through. And she gave me this bliss ball recipe. And I think I must have been in like year 6 or 7. And over the Christmas holidays, I made them like every day. I was like, this is amazing. This is the best. I made them for my brother, my sister, because we were all doing sports and active growing up. And that planted the seed quite early on for me that this is something that I might want to do. But as I progressed in gymnastics, I quickly started training 25, 30 hours a week. So did have to make that choice, which way did I want to go, with gymnastics or with dance? And I did end up following that rhythmic gymnastics pathway. And I went on to joining the national squad and got to do a lot of international travel as well, which was really exciting. And I got a lot of different life experiences through that. But I think I probably had a different experience to Nat, and reflecting on it now, I think I had a very complicated relationship with food, my body, and I also struggled with a lot of injuries as well. And so I wanted to become a sports dietitian and work in the dance and gymnastics space specifically to help young athletes, like I wish I kind of had that early on, you know, to help them learn about nutrition, to improve performance and recovery, but also to build a healthy relationship with food and body. So that was kind of the space for me where I was like, this is something I want to do, and I really want to go down that pathway. And it feels really, you know, special that we've been able to start doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very interesting that you've had sort of similar yet kind of different experiences. And I think that a lot of the people who are listening to the podcast today would be able to relate probably to both of your journeys. And I love that, you know, the like your passion for cooking and actually enjoying food and is actually part of what makes you want to become a dietitian too. It was something that I considered, but I was interested more in the scientific part of it, I think. Like I did chemistry at school and, yeah, didn't end up going that way. But, yeah, it's very, very cool. And also that you've both had some experience dancing, or I guess, you know, various forms of aesthetic sport, which is also really great, because I think there's a lot of, you know, sports dietitians, but they maybe don't necessarily have a background in dance, and they don't understand, you know, the training demands, as you were saying before, like having to train so many hours per week and also just, you know, it's not about scoring a goal and winning points and things like that. It's such an arbitrary goal. It's really hard to satisfy. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. So do you want to tell me a little bit about the Athlete Project and sort of what was, I guess, what the inspiration was behind that?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose Zoe and I, like, I started working at Eat Smart about 6 months before Zoe. Zoe was actually working as part of our admin team while she was a student, and then quickly came on board as a dietitian. And it was always floated, I suppose, the idea of like, oh, we should do some sort of project in dance and gymnastics, because that's, you know, where our passion lies. And took a bit of thinking, and in the end, yeah, I suppose, as you know, ex-gymnasts and dancers and our sports dietitian, we wanted to build the Athletes Project to really help athletes improve their understanding of nutrition, as well as to build upon that relationship with food and their body as well.
Yeah, and I think that's why, like, we want that holistic approach as well, like the health of the athlete or the dancer, not just that performance aspect. And that's why we want to focus on having really strong minds, fueled bodies, but also happy. Because like for our dancers, we want them to enjoy their time in dancing, because with sports, you know, people go, you really have to focus. And this is, you know, a short time in your life. Like I remember having coaches overseas be like, it doesn't matter if you're not enjoying it. It doesn't matter if it's really hard, because it's, you know, only 25 years of your life. And to some extent, I think, well, yes, that's true. But also, like, life's too short to not enjoy it. So if you're doing sport or you're doing dance, we want that to be a positive time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I think especially for, like, you know, dancers and ballet dancers and people who take it really seriously, they've had that passion that's, you know, led them to do all of these hours. It hasn't been something, you know, generally that their parents have put them into and made them do, you know, the full-time programs or the part-time programs and, you know, the every afternoon and competitions and the Steadfords and all these sorts of things. It has been that passion that has led them there. And we want them to really enjoy that time because, you know, you can dance for your whole life, but I suppose we have to be realistic that there's probably a peak in everyone's athletic performance. And we want you to enjoy that time because I think both Zoe and I can reflect on our own time as dancers and gymnasts, and there's a lot of, you know, really positive moments there and obviously struggles as well, but we want to support that and, you know, I suppose support also really that holistic approach, like Zoe said, and the body image side of things, and, you know, knowing that not every day is going to be perfect. You're not going to wake up feeling amazing every day, but what are the tools and the strategies we can give to our dancers to make the most of every day and make sure that they're feeling supported in their journey to whatever their goal is, whether that's, you know, just feeling really good at dance in a few classes in a week, or if it's an exam or potentially looking to, you know, take dance more seriously and pursue a career in dance as well.
And I think it's really special as well because we both do a little bit of coaching. Well, I do a little bit, Nat does a lot, but it's really important to us that our athletes feel safe and enjoy their time at training. Like, yes, sometimes training is going to be hard. You're not going to have a good training every day. That's okay. But we really want it to be a supportive environment where they're enjoying that time with their friends, learning new things. Because at the end of the day, when you're doing a sport like gymnastics or if you're doing dance, there's a lot of hours. So we want to make sure that they're enjoyable.
An excellent point. And I think, you know, that is sometimes overlooked when, as you said, when people start taking it really seriously. There are lots of people who are going for like full-time dance, you know, roles in companies and, you know, not everybody makes it to that level, but you're so right. Like what you want to do is then reflect on the time that you spent working really hard towards that goal and feel like you enjoyed that time and that you've got a healthy body after that, I suppose. That's the other thing too, isn't it? Mm.
Exactly.
Yeah. Love it. Absolutely love it. I think it's so important. And there's a lot of, you know, misinformation that floats around, you know, aesthetic sports and dance in particular. So I think it's really good to have people like yourselves working in this space. So relative energy deficit in sport. So I'd love for you to define it and talk about what it is. There's been like a recent consensus statement published, in 2023, this is. So I'm sure you've seen it and talked about it in depth. So I'm really interested to talk about what some of the what is relative energy deficit in sport for one, and also what are some of the presentations that you might see in some of your dancers or aesthetic athletes in clinic?
Yeah, so relative energy deficiency in sports, and we basically shorten that to RED. So if you hear the word REDS, that's what we're referring to, as it's much easier to say. It's a bit of a mouthful. So it's basically a syndrome of both health and performance outcomes, which can be experienced by both female and male athletes exposed to low energy availability. Zoe, did you want to jump into what low energy availability is?
So I feel like I say this like 10 times every day. This comes up so much in clinic. But energy availability is essentially the energy remaining from food after exercise, whether that's dance class, whether that's your Pilates, whether that's strength work. So it's the energy that's left after that that is available for basic bodily processes like growth, your immune system, reproductive function, recovery, bone health, sleep. So everything. And if the body doesn't have enough energy from food after activity, it will essentially start to put some of these functions on power saving mode. And this is where we can run into issues with experiencing low energy availability. And it's essentially like a phone is running out of charge and it's telling you that it's going to pop itself on power saving mode to get through the day.
Yeah. So I guess with low energy availability too, low energy availability is almost like the exposure and then REDS is the outcome. So you can kind of think this like a similar example, like smoking is an exposure which leads to lung cancer. So the more exposure we have to something, I suppose the increased risk we then have in developing that syndrome. So I suppose with low energy availability, it is on a continuum and there is some form of low energy availability that is okay. And we refer to this as adaptable. So this is things like waking up first thing in the morning. Most people don't eat during the night, so it's expected that we would be in low energy availability first thing in the morning, but then we're going to have breakfast really soon, and then we're going to be not in low energy availability. We can then move along this continuum or spectrum into what we classify as more problematic low energy availability, which essentially just means more increased exposure, which can then increase the risk of developing, you know, a variety of health concerns and performance impairments too. So it really is that continuum, and we can go up and down that continuum, and we want to try and keep, I suppose, dancers in that adaptable area. But again, I suppose, and Zoe's going to touch on this a bit more, but dancers with busy schedules of often school, social events, all their classes, family commitments, traveling to and from, all of their activities can put you in a more high risk category, because it's just busy. It's hard to eat when you're so busy. You're rushing from class to class or place to place. You're getting changed. You don't have access to store food. So that can be a really big problem for dancers of any level, whether that's more, you know, a 1-2 day a week afternoon student or into our full-time programs where they're doing hours back to back and may have very short breaks where they're also expected to change and rush off to the bathroom as well.
I think that's a really important point as well, like Nat said, is that I think a lot of people assume, looking into the dance world, that a lot of that can be intentional. But sometimes it can actually be unintentional, and it's just that the dancers are super busy, and that's where education is really important in staying in that safer space when we're looking at health. Because when we're looking at REDS, yes, it's looking at performance, but it's also looking at the health of the dancer. So when we're looking at common signs or, you know, flags that maybe we've got some REDS going on, in terms of your health, we're looking at things like having missed periods or your cycle length changing, having a lot of trouble concentrating in class and struggling with your motivation levels, having an upset stomach. So, you know, lots of bloating or getting constipated. I know there's lots of things going around at the moment, but getting sick often, you know, and missing class. And it can be struggling with energy levels in class, but it could also be falling asleep in class at school. And I was speaking to Nat just earlier and I said, you know, in assembly, without fail, every week I would fall asleep unless I was sitting on the floor. So if I was in a chair, it was guaranteed that I was going to take a nap. but, you know, like not recovering between classes, having troubles with your sleep. We've also got things like injuries taking a long time to heal. So you're having to have a long time away from dance, lots of stress reactions, fractures. And then the two new body systems that we have added are kind of, yeah, that's sleep disturbances and also the urinary incontinence as well. Whereas like when we're looking at it from a performance perspective, some of the things we're looking at, you know, are struggling to build and maintain strength. Again, struggling with motivation, always being sore and recovering after training is an issue. Like when you're doing that much, you know, dance, yes, you're going to be sore. But we still would want you to be recovering to some level so that you can turn up the next day and do your best. And then another one that's a little different is that cognitive function. So struggling to learn, but then also remember new choreography as well can be a sign that there may be some underfueling going on.
And I think it's important to add to that, I suppose all of these things, they're has to be a level of context around the individual and, you know, what their schedule is looking like. It's a very complex REDS. And, you know, for example, like the recovery aspect, you know, if you're sore day after day, and you just never feel like you recover, or maybe you were recovering really well and then suddenly you're not, that would be a bit of a red flag that I would, you know, flick my ears on if someone told me that in a consult. Whereas if someone had had 2 weeks off over the Christmas break and had their first day back and they were like, I am so sore because over the Christmas break I relaxed and, you know, had a bit more downtime, I would be like, okay, like hopefully within the next few days the delayed onset muscle soreness goes away and that's okay, and then you can kind of move on from that. So there's certainly context to a lot of these things, and if you have one of these things, it doesn't mean that you have REDS. There is a diagnostic measure that is used to define or diagnose someone with REDS, However, even if you are having one of kind of the signs or symptoms that Zoe just described, and that's causing you distress, or you feel like that's impairing your mental health or your well-being, that's definitely a reason, I suppose, to come in, see your GP potentially initially, depending on what it might be. So if, you know, your menstrual cycle is, you know, you've skipped a period potentially, it might be worthwhile going to the GP initially. Or if you're going, oh, I'm just really tired, I feel like maybe I'm not really eating the right foods around dance, you might want to go see your dietitian, a sports dietitian, preferably first up. And we can definitely help like along that continuum, like we were speaking about too. Or even if you just want to be more proactive, maybe you're about to start a full-time program or a part-time program, you're going, wow, my load is really going to increase come the new year, and I don't know how I'm going to handle these changes. We can definitely help to support that behavior change and, you know, put strategies in there so that you feel really confident going into a new year, or, you know, potentially you've just joined a company or you're moving across the state to join a full-time program and you're living out of home for the first time and you're not really sure how to cook. Or there's so many different variables that I feel like dancers struggle with, as I suppose in the dance world, but also just as human beings and navigating, you know, moving from an 8-year-old to a teenager to potentially an adult living, a young adult really, living out of home for the first time, or maybe with flatmates or something, and having to organize all your own meals and snacks for the first time. We can definitely help there too.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I often say to my patients is, you know, it's not going to be a wasted session, you know, if you go to see a dietitian, because, you know, at the very least they're going to say, actually everything you're doing is really good, keep doing this, that and the other, but have you considered this? Did you know about this? You know, and you can use it as a learning opportunity. So you don't need to wait until you're, you know, experiencing signs and symptoms of RedS to go and see a sports dietitian either. And I definitely always recommend seeing a sports dietitian, because you guys have extra training as well, in Australia in particular, but obviously in other countries as well. So yeah, a sports dietitian has that extra knowledge about fueling and timing of fueling and an understanding of how much you're actually doing. I think there are a lot of practitioners out there who wouldn't ever imagine how many hours people put in the studio, especially from quite a young age in some cases. So yeah, I'm definitely an advocate for getting people in proactively, as you said, before there's a problem, and, you know, picking up little bits and pieces that, you know, you might go, oh, even if you've just got one or two sort of things going on, yeah, you can always investigate those. And the other thing I really like about the consensus statement too is it's got a whole list of differential diagnoses as well. So yeah, things like, okay, so if you're having irregular periods, like that could be from underfueling, but it could also be from some other medical condition that needs investigating. So it's a good sort of way to, yeah, to kind of work out whether it's to do with nutrition or whether it's to do with something else. And you don't want to miss those things either. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. And we definitely work so closely with dancers, whether it's a sports doctor, GP or physio, or even sports psychologist, so closely, because we are just one piece of that puzzle that, you know, a dancer, especially at a high level, should be having those regular check-ins with to really support their overall, you know, health and well-being in that space.
Yeah. And I think as well, it doesn't mean that there's something wrong if you're coming to see a sports dietitian. It doesn't mean that you've done something wrong, you're not trying hard enough. Like if you get some aches and pains after class, you'll go see a physio. And that's a really straightforward standard, yep, I'm sore, off to physio I go. But sometimes that link isn't really there when we're looking at like sports nutrition and seeing a dietitian. There can be all these other little thoughts that pop up along the way that go, oh, I don't need to see them. You know, I don't want, you know, my other friends at dance to know I'm seeing them. Like, and there is still a little bit of that stigma, I think, when we're looking at this aesthetic space. And that's what Nat and I really want to kind of work at as well, is, you know, it being normal to see a sports dietitian, and that you'll be seeing a sports dietitian for a different reason to your friend, because everyone is different and that's okay.
Yeah, we're definitely not the food police. We love food. So we yeah, want you also to love food and just, you know, be able to fuel your body to support your goals, both, you know, in health, but in your dance goals as well. I think that's so important that we consider that whole person. Because sometimes dance, like I know when Zoe and I were both, you know, training at those high hours, like it can feel like your dance classes or that goal that you're reaching for is your whole world, and it can feel like you're kind of almost no other perspective at times. So sometimes also having that sports dietitian as that outside perspective to be like, you know what, I know you've always struggled with this, but how about we try this instead? Do you think that can work for you? How can we manipulate that so that suits you and your lifestyle without that causing any extra stress or challenge? Because I mean, most people are busy these days, but I think, you know, dancers and then extending to gymnasts and other high performance sports is just another whole nother kettle of fish. Like they're superhumans almost at times, and they definitely need additional support.
Of course. And it's like, we don't want food or nutrition to be a stress in your life. We want to take that stress away. You know, we're here to help you. We want to help you be your best you. And like Nat said, we aren't the food police. We aren't going to shame you for, you know, eating certain foods. Our goal is that you are eating to nourish your body and to support your performance and recovery in dance, but that you're also enjoying food. So something that we talk about a lot is, yes, fueling your body, but also fueling your soul. And you need to have a balance of both when we're looking at that overall health of the, you know, of the dancer, because it's not just that performance side. It's also that life aspect as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really great approach, and it's so refreshing to hear you both saying these things. I think it's a really important message. So what are, I'd love to know, three things that you each wish that athletes or dancers knew about nutrition from your own experiences and obviously working in clinics. So yeah, I'm really interested to know three things that you wish each dancer or athlete knew about nutrition.
Okay, I'll start first. So my first one would really be around that fueling around dance. Like a lot of people struggle to eat around their dance classes, or it could extend to, you know, performances as well. As one, that time, we've spoken a lot about how busy dancers are, but also it could be reduced appetite around dancing, or not feeling good with a, you know, a meal in their stomach and then having to, you know, jump around the place. And there's definitely ways that we can overcome these barriers to make sure that we're feeling well. And I think it can often be like the easier option to just go, oh no, that doesn't make me feel good when I eat that, so I just won't eat anything at all. Especially when nerves are at play as well. Like so many dancers get nervous, you know, especially around performances. So we can definitely support that. And then I suppose the other thing around fueling is it's not just before class, but actually during as well. So I suppose for a lot of dance schools, their structure is almost like, you know, anywhere from 45 minutes to maybe an hour and a half classes at a time, back to back. Like you don't have a lot of time, or, you know, you barely have enough time to change potentially from flats into point shoes, let alone try and eat something or even get to the bathroom at times. But fueling, especially if you're dancing for longer than 2 hours at a time, is such an important area that a lot of dancers overlook, because it's not the norm. Like not everyone's eating at dance. They might feel that they're different, even if they're hungry. And often, I suppose too, we can be dancing into the evening when you might be having dinner on another night too. So we're kind of like, oh, we're hungry. I'm sure Zoe can relate, when we're teaching and coaching gymnastics, so many of the kids by around like 6:30 are like, what's for dinner? What are you having for dinner, Sally? Like, because everyone's starting to think about food because they're getting hungry. And we know that, I suppose, from a physiological aspect, even if you were to fuel your body perfectly throughout the entire day and the day before, if you didn't eat, say, during a 4-hour block of classes, come the end of those, you know, last couple of hours, you would really be struggling to give your best in the class, but also in terms of that concentration and that real mental aspect of dance. You know, it's a sport that we really need to be concentrating to make sure that we're really giving our best. It's quite easy to switch off your brain if you're doing a bar exercise or something that you've done 1,000 of times, and now suddenly you're on the wrong foot, or you know, aren't focusing on your technique as much as you can. So that's, you know, some of the reasons that we really want to fuel our body during dance. But I suppose also to reduce that exposure to low energy availability as well is really important. If we're dancing for 4 hours, we're definitely not eating for 4 hours potentially. And we want to try and you know, improve that for dancers, and then coming up with, I suppose, you know, what can you actually eat or what can you drink potentially? So maybe it's a sports drink in the water bottle or a smoothie in the water bottle that you can just sip on when you get some water, or it might be something like a bit of dried fruit or goody balls that you can kind of pop in your mouth, just one bite, chew it, and then, you know, off you go. Every time you get a water break or need to change your shoes, or potentially you have another break in there too. So I think that's probably my first one, is around that fueling before and then during dance. Most dancers are pretty good at fueling after dance because they're pretty hungry at that point, so they do quite a good job. But definitely that before and during dance is probably where I see dancers running into trouble more often than not.
One of the things that, you know, I remember when I was dancing in, I guess, a full-time program, like I'd get up in the morning and I'd have breakfast at maybe like 6:30 or something. And then, you know, get ready for ballet and jump on my public transport, which took, you know, like an hour to get to dancing. And then I'd warm up for another sort of like half hour or get changed and things like that. And then, you know, eventually we'd start class. And then, like, you know, by the time that sort of happened, it's been, you know, 3 hours or something like that. And then, you know, you don't actually get a morning tea break for another 2 hours. So it's like, it's such a, like, even though he's like, well, I've had breakfast this morning, but like, there's such a big gap of time. Like, that's one of the things that when I look back on how I used to feel, I'll be like, yeah, probably could have had something extra before I went into class at that time. Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's that preparation and having an awareness of your schedule, and you have to take the opportunities you have. So if you know that, you know, you're not going to have that opportunity for another 2 hours when it's already been 3 hours since you've had something, it's super important that you take, you know, a moment to have something. And like Nat said, it doesn't have to be a full meal. Sometimes it is just lots of snacks scattered throughout, and then, you know, fueling up with a larger meal later in the day when you can. But when it is around dance, it's taking those moments when you have them. It doesn't need to be 10, 15 minutes. It might be 5, and that's okay, because something's better than nothing at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably my second thing would be really around the menstrual cycle. I feel like it's a big myth. You know, oh, dancers, they're normally petite, they get them a menstrual cycle later, or it's okay if you skip a period because you're working really hard. And this is definitely a myth and something, you know, a really big, I suppose, measure that in clinic and with working with individuals that were looking about menstrual cycle. And I find even with a lot of, you know, people who have recently gone their period and young dancers, they don't really have an awareness around their menstrual cycle. They may not be tracking it as such. And so tracking your menstrual cycle is really important, as it is such a big indicator for how your fueling is going. And I suppose the other thing is too, is around the importance of menstrual health for bone density as well. We know that estrogen, which is one of the hormones that is really important around being protective for bone health. So if we're not getting a menstrual cycle, these hormones are low, which can lead to basically increased bone loss within the body. And over time, with, you know, a lot of force going through your legs as a dancer, that can, you know, increase your risk of stress fractures and stress reactions. So that is probably just stock standard. Every single dancer come through asking around menstrual cycle, getting them to then track it as well, as it is just so important for overall health and well-being. And then to, I suppose, if we're looking after that, we're reducing our risk of bone injuries, and then we can keep you dancing for longer. A stress fracture can take you out for quite a while and is often something that can be quite devastating for a dancer. So keeping that regular, I suppose, tracking of your cycle. And also, if you haven't had a period by the age of 15, is investigating with a GP around, you know, if there's any other causes to why you haven't gotten a period yet, is really important as well. And potentially an endocrinologist as well, but definitely starting with the GP would be my first point of call for someone who hasn't had their period by 15, or who's got that secondary amenorrhea, which is the absence of 3 or more periods in a row that you've skipped. My third one is probably around body image. And I think body image, I'm sure a lot of dancers see it on social media. And I just want everyone, I suppose, to know listening, like, every single person has bad body image days, and like you're certainly not alone. And it can become especially difficult in aesthetic sports when you're looking in a mirror in, you know, tight fitting clothes often. And I suppose sports dietitians and other medical professionals as well, like a sports psychologist, are definitely here to support you and give you strategies so that these, I suppose, negative thoughts don't lead to negative health behaviors. I feel like probably 5 years ago, I would have said, oh, everyone should just, you know, love their body 100% how it is. Like, we should work towards like no bad body image days ever. But I think that's probably just an unrealistic way of thinking. Like, Zoe and I'm sure we both have, you know, bad or poor body image days. But it's really knowing, I suppose, what to do with these thoughts and so that they don't impact you long term. And as sports dietitians, this is, you know, something we're talking about all the time, and it's come up probably in every single question that we've answered today, and is such an important topic. But I just really want everyone to listening know that like you are not alone, and if you feel like you're struggling with body image in itself, that's definitely a reason to come and chat to a sports dietitian, or maybe if you're more comfortable, a psychologist that you're already seeing as well, that would be a good place to start as well. So yeah, they're probably my three tips: the fueling, menstrual cycle and the tracking of the menstrual cycle, and then around body image.
And that's a really good point as well with the expecting every day to be a good day. I had a chat with a client just yesterday that wasn't involved in any sports, but we were talking about their mental health and how that they're having less good days. And it was like, okay, well, the day's a long time. Like, maybe we can't expect the whole day to be a good day. Maybe we just need to focus on those good moments and see how they stack up across the day as well. Because at the end of the day, it's almost adding that other level of fatigue onto it when we're expecting the whole day to be a great day in dance, a great day of food, a great day when we're thinking about our body. And like, that's hard. So sometimes we need to make it a little easier for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And I think also giving, like, especially, you know, young dancers, young adults, that safe place to talk about it, because I think it's a really hard thing to even admit to someone like, hey, I'm really struggling with this. And is probably why eating disorders, is in part why I think people probably with a diagnosed eating disorder or disordered eating behaviors feel at times alone. But wherever you are on that spectrum, like definitely like sports dietitians, other medical professionals can be that safe place for that individual to just have a chat, like more than anything about where you are. And then so we can help with those strategies too.
Exactly. Yeah. I think when to build on with Nat, so I think for me, my top three, first one is calcium rich foods are so, so important. Often dancers are specializing at quite a young age, and then they're continuing in dance into the years that they are actually reaching peak bone mass. So we can't wait till we leave dance to build up a good bone density level. And that's where it's really important that we're using those calcium-rich foods across the day and consistently to support our bone health. I think second is that as a dancer, it's important to recognize that you are at an increased risk of lower energy availability. So we've spoken about some different signs and things today. And I think it's probably a really good opportunity to have a think about your day, think about your week and you, and if you think that you're identifying with any of those different signs.
Mm.
Third is that we're just here to help. We want to help you. We want to help you be your best you. And we don't want you to be scared about seeking help from a sports dietitian. Everyone has something to learn. You know, you might come in to learn about something and then we find that there's something else we can help you with as well. And that it's, if it's something you've thought about but you're unsure about, give it a go. You never know.
Mm. Oh, look, I think just the body image as well, you know, for dancers, you are looking at yourself in front of a mirror for so many hours and nobody else on the planet has to do that. And that's, I think, something you need to cut yourself some slack sometimes, you know, like, and recognize that that's actually another challenge that's involved with ballet and dance that's very unique to ballet and dance. Like, I don't think there are any other sports really that involve that much looking at yourself in a mirror. So any negative body image days you have are going to be amplified as well, right? Like,
exactly. And yeah. You're in a leotard. Your body is going to look different before and after lunch, before and after eating, right? That food has to go somewhere. That's your digestion. It's going to look a little different. Like, that's normal. Like, if you feel like you've got ongoing, you know, painful bloating and trouble with your bowels, yes, that's something that we need to look at. But I don't know if this is too, you know, much, but you're not, we're not expecting to see a flat stomach after you've eaten because you've got food in your stomach, and that's normal. But often, you know, you see a dancer and they're like, oh, you know, like, it's not what I looked like half an hour ago. That's normal. You don't need to look like you looked like you did before. And if your stomach's not flat anyway, who cares? It doesn't matter. It's about how you're dancing.
Yeah, and that's very true. I think sometimes going back to coaching experiences and having experiences with coaches, sometimes comments that come from coaches can make that a point of anxiety, I suppose, for some dancers as well. Like, and that's very difficult, I think. But, you know, I guess maybe if it helps anybody listening, just to be aware that any comments that are made about that, like, your body does have to digest food, you have to eat food. Like, it's normal, as you said, for your body to look a bit different throughout the day. And anybody who's trying to tell you that that's not the case, like, maybe try to look at that, take that, those comments with a grain of salt, because, you know, it's not realistic, I suppose. That's
exactly. Probably. I think it's take it with a grain of salt, but maybe it says a little bit more about their relationship with food and their body as well, because it's exactly. Very, exactly. Like, the people that you're working with, they may have struggled with their relationship with food, their relationship with their body, and they might not even realize. They might think that those thoughts are normal. So they're not thinking of that as well. Sometimes it's also important to recognize that those comments aren't actually coming from a negative place. It's just that they think that's normal and it's okay to talk about those things, which isn't necessarily a good thing, but unfortunately it's part of it.
Yeah. And I think if you're like a parent listening to this, like, definitely if you're worried about your child with any of the things we've discussed, like, for sure, like, as sports dietitians, we're fairly sensitive around these topics, and often with young dancers we'll get their parents like emailing or giving us a call prior to the appointment and just giving us a bit of a heads up on what's going on, so that we can really address that sensitively with the dancer or the, you know, the young person in front of us, because we want to, again, just support and make that a safe place for the individual to, you know, say what they want to say and get the support that they need to have at the end of the day.
I just want to say, like, before we move on, like, this has been really great chat, and I'm really excited for this episode to be released. I think it's going to be really good for dancers to hear. Just to give some information for the listeners, like, if you guys are based in Australia, in Brisbane, but I'm guessing that you also do virtual consults as well. Is that? Yeah, cool.
We do telehealth, but we're also based all over Brisbane. And that's sort of the Gold Coast a little bit. We're everywhere.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, your qualification is that you're accredited practicing dietitians. Is that correct? Yeah. And then you've also done extra training and you're sports dietitians. So are you registered with Sports Dietitians Australia? Is that also correct?
Yeah.
So if you weren't in Brisbane or couldn't find a time to see Nat or Zoe or any of the staff at Eat Smart, like, you could also have a look on Sports Dietitians Australia website to find someone. Yeah. And I'll also put like a little link to the Butterfly Foundation in this as well, because we're talking a bit about disordered eating and body image too. Yeah.
Wonderful resources.
Yeah. And my last question doesn't have anything to do with nutrition. It's got everything to do with ballet, but you've both danced. And I ask every guest whether they have had any experience in point shoes, and if they have, what kind of point shoes they used to wear. No judgment if not.
So we actually both have. I was not the most beginner of a dancer. I would say I was definitely more of a jazz and hip hop dancers, but I did ballet. I kind of stopped point probably at the end of grade 12 and then continued on with some ballet training, but I wore block European balance, and I did have to Google online to try and remember the name.
Yeah, I was actually the same, but I will admit I Googled what Nat popped down and I was like, oh, yep, that's what I had. I remember. And I would have been about the similar age when I started, and I remember it being just like the best thing ever. Like, everyone was so excited about going on point, getting fittings. Like, it was such an exciting time. But I think I was on point up until I finished around that like 14 years.
Yeah. I remember being really excited, but then when my dance teacher made us just walk around on demi point to break them in, I was like, what? We don't get to go on actually go on point in the first day because we were just trying to almost get used to them. But
you mean we have to pace ourselves?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a funny thing. I remember being so excited, but then like actually putting them on and going, oh, this actually really hurts.
What have I done?
But I'm here now, so I guess I'll just keep going.
Yeah. I don't really have an option at this point.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. We'll get used to it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. Thank you so much for this chat, for your time this morning, for both of you at the one time, which I think must be tricky given that you are here, there and everywhere. So I really appreciate it. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to letting this episode go into the wild. So thank you very much, Natalie and Zoe from Eat Smart.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.